Over Pesach, I saw a guy in shul reading a book that I first read 15 years ago and I really loved. It was a book written by Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, formerly of Atlanta, Georgia, now of Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh. He was the rabbi of a shul in Atlanta for many, many years. And it's just like a journal of interesting things that happened to him from the perspective of a rabbi in a very small community in a very challenging time for an Orthodox rabbi in Atlanta, Georgia, in 1952 was when he started. And he tells one story that always stuck with me of the first time he got a shaila. And he was all excited, he had gone to yeshiva, he has smicha, he's ready, what kind of prima gadim is he going to have to look up to answer his first shaila, it's going to be a kashra shaila, a nida shaila, a shabbos shaila. And the phone rings and he's all excited, Rabbi, I have a shaila for you. Sure, Bob, what can I do for you? Well, my wife just had a baby boy and I had a question for you. Oh, okay, baby boy, pidna ben shaila, brismila shaila, what's it going to be? Ask away, Bob. I just wanted to know, what's the Hebrew equivalent for the name Nicholas? Suddenly he feels a little deflated. Nicholas? He starts thinking, I could see it now. Whatever Jewish name I suggest is irrelevant anyway. He's only going to be called by it at his bris and his bar mitzvah, and then it's going to be forgotten anyhow. He's going to be Nicholas his whole life. The boy's going to grow up, and he's going to have a child, probably Nick Jr., who will undoubtedly make his last name sound less Jewish. Maybe instead of Greenstein, it will just be Green, and he'll have a child himself, Nick Green III, proud member of the First Episcopalian Church of Atlanta. And he's, feeling somewhat deflated. And he wanted to say all that. But instead he bit his tongue and he said, I think it would be Nechemya. Thanks a lot, Rabbi. No problem, Mazel Tov. And Rabbi Feldman can't help but wonder to himself, is he going to spend the balance of his life providing people with the Hebrew equivalents for Butch, Joanne, Cleet, and Betty Lou? Which he writes, Baruch, Hannah, Kalman, and Brachaleah, for those keeping score. And then fast forward 35 years. And Nechemya goes by the name Nechemya. And he's an observant Jew, living in a Jewish community, kids in yeshiva, his five beautiful children, raising a Jewish family. How did that happen? How did Nicholas, in 1952 in Atlanta, Georgia, become Nechemya in 1987, raising our proper family? See, you might be enticed to think that there was some epiphany, some major moment where he or his family were inspired, but we know that's not the way it happens. This Rabbi Feldman had a relationship with the family over many, many years. And there was slow, incremental growth. And they developed in a healthy way. And Rabbi Feldman was there when Nick became a bar mitzvah and he had to learn the brachos. And he was there when they kashered their kitchen. And he was there each and every step of the way. And he understood that if you're going to develop a religious personality, there has to be realistic goals. And things have to be accomplished methodically and slowly, slow and steady steps. And trying to do too much all at once is going to stunt or reverse whatever religious growth you think you have. It's obvious, you have to learn to walk before you begin to run. Sustained progress requires slow and steady steps. And we know that. It's a message we've heard 1,000 times. But it's against that backdrop that it's most surprising that the Torah, which is our guide to successful, well-adjusted life, would juxtapose the end of Parshas Acharemos with the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim. See, at the end of Acharemos, we have all of the arayos. Ervas Avicha, Verasim Chalosigale, Ervas Achoscha, Ervas Basbincha, Basbidcha, Mizara Chalositin Lemolech. After arayos, we get a child sacrifice. And then bestiality, it goes on. And immediately following that, Kedoshim to you. Should be holy. So we're talking to people who are holding by, should I engage in bestiality or not? No, don't. And then the next step is, Kedoshim to you, you should be a Nish Kadosh. There's got to be, shouldn't it be the road from sinner to saint have a few more stops along the way? Just turn around, maybe light Shabbos candles, act with integrity, be more respectful, something. So I think the answer to this question lies in the Maharal's tremendous insight into a very dramatic story that appears in Maseches Ksubos Daf Samach Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara over there says, Tanu Rabbanan, Maisam Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai Sheyarochev Al Chamor. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was riding on a donkey. Vayotzim Yerushalayim, and he was going outside of Yerushalayim. Vayotalmidim Malchin Achrav, and his Talmidim were following close behind. Ra'a Riba Achas Sheyasim Laketes Sorin Mi Ben Galoli Bemten Shalavim, and he saw a young girl picking barley from the excrement of animals of Arabs. Kivan Sharasa also, and she saw the great Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai Nisatva Besar of Amdul Fadr. She pulls herself together and stands in front of him. Amr alone, she says, Rebbe, Parnaseini, support me. Amr Labiti Miyat, he says, who are you? Amr Lo, Bas Nakdimon Ben Gurion Ani. I am the daughter of the famous rich man, Nakdimon Ben Gurion. Amr Labiti, Mamun Shobesavicha, Echan Allah. Where's your family's money? Amrla Rebbe lo kadin matl matl b'Yerushalayim melech mamun chaser v'amila chesed. Don't you know the mashal they always say that if you want to preserve money, you have to give up some of the money or do chesed with some of the money? And they didn't do sufficient chesed. V'shal beis chamicha echanu. Okay, where's the money from your in-law's house? Also a wealthy family. Amrla bazeh v'ibedezeh. They kept on loaning money to my parents, so it all got wiped out. Amrlo Rebbe, Zacharata Keshachsamt al Ksubasi, and then she started getting nostalgic with him. Remember when you signed my Ksuba? Amrlehen the Talmidav, he said to his Talmidav, ooh, do I remember that? Zacharata Keshachsamt al Ksubasi Shalzu, Vayisi Koriba Elef Alafim Dinare Zav Mibes Avia Chutz Mishel Chamel. What she brought in from her father's house, aside from what her in-law's house brought, was thousands and thousands of golden coins. Bacha Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai v'yomer, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai cries out and he says, Ashreichem Yisrael, bizman she'osin ritzono shel makom ein kaluma v'lashon sholetas b'hem. How fortunate are you, Klal Yisrael, when you do the ratzon Hashem, no nation holds any sway over you. Bizman she'enosin ritzono shel makom, mosin v'yarum ha'shvelim, when you don't do the will of God, you are given over in the hands of the lowest of the nations. V'lo b'yarum ha'shvelim, b'yad v'hemton shel ha'shvelim, not just in the lowest of the nations, but under the animals of the lowest of the nations. Here was this wealthy girl from a wealthy family. They had everything. And now it's not enough that she's beneath a lowly Arab. She's beneath the animal of a lowly Arab, picking up barley from its excrement. And the Maharal points out an obvious difficulty with this remark of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Ashreichem is an appropriate comment when mentioning that the Jewish people are capable of unparalleled success and greatness. But the term Ashreichem seems to be a direct contradiction to the second half of the statement. Why is it Ashreichem that we're capable of sinking to depths that are beneath the animals of the lowest of the nations? Wouldn't we be more fortunate if we can sin and still remain above all other nations? Wouldn't that be an Ashreichem? Why is it an Ashreichem when we sink so low? And the Maharal explains that the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael is as evident in our lowliness when we don't do the Ritzono Shel Makom as it is in our glory when we do the Ritzono Shel Makom. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, in his Kuzari, points out that there are five levels of matter in this world, and we've discussed this many times. The lowest level being domain, something that has no life to it whatsoever, doesn't grow, doesn't receive nourishment. Then above that it's someach, something that grows and sprouts, and while not quite a living creature, has the ability to be developed and nurtured. And then above that a balchai, an animal that's a real live creature, moves about freely, seeks its own form of nourishment, reproduces. And then there's a medaber, a person who's capable of articulating thoughts, verbal communication, and then finally a fifth level, Yisrael, a Jew. Five categories arranged as rungs on a ladder, a domain, like a rock, a tzomeach, a tree, a balchai, an animal, a medaber, humanity, and a Yisrael. But what defines each of these categories? How do I know when something is its own category versus when something is just a little bit better than the other thing. I mean, what makes it its own category? What rationale did Rabbi Yehuda Halevi follow to determine that each of the qualities these items possess demand that they be placed in a category all their own? Maybe a tree, a tzomech, and the rock, a domeim, are different, but they're no more different than a fruit-bearing tree and a not fruit-bearing tree. What makes them their own category? How do we know that the tzomech is not just a rock that happens to grow, a domeim that happens to possess the ability, the koach hatzmicha? Well, how do I know? So the Maggid of Minsk pointed out a simple test that the Kuzari must have employed to determine when something demands its own category. And he pointed out, when the quality that defines that category is lost, what happens to it? Does it simply drop one rung on the ladder, or does it fall completely, unable to maintain even the level below it? A tree that stops bearing fruit can remain a barren tree, but the tree or the flower, the tzomech, that loses the koach hatzmicha, that you can no longer nourish, that can no longer grow, that can no longer be watered, gets cut from the ground, it doesn't become a domeim, it doesn't become like a rock that's rock solid and steady, it shrivels and disappears. The Baal Chai, the animal that loses its life, does not become a tzomeach, the ability to grow like a flower. It decomposes. The medaber, who loses the koach hadibur and is unable to articulate thoughts and communicate, has less ability to survive and fend for himself without the help of society than other living creatures do. He becomes more sad, more pathetic, more in need of help and support than an animal. And finally, the Jew, when you take away his connection to Torah, Torah's teachings, the history of the Jewish people and the destiny of the Jewish people, he doesn't revert to an average ethical person. He doesn't become like the rest of humanity. He becomes much worse. You see it in contemporary society. Who presides over the moral bankruptcy that is Hollywood, if not the Jew who's divorced from Torah? Who runs the Russian mafia, which is rumored to be the world's worst and most vicious mafia, if not the Jew who's divorced from Torah? Who are the most dangerous people to the Jewish nation, if not the Jew who's divorced from Torah? And that, the Maral says, is the comment of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Ashreichem Yisrael, how fortunate you are, Klal Yisrael, that you are so bound up with Ritzono Shel Makom, with the Ratzon Hashem, with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents, that when you perform Ritzono Shel Makom, you transcend normal human existence. And you, when you, God forbid, abandon Ritzono Shel Makom, you abandon Torah, you abandon mitzvos, there are no limits to the depths to which you will sink. So, as it turns out, the Maral says, it's from the lowliness of the Jew who is not Oser Ritzono Shel Makom that we can see Ashreichem Yisrael, how fortunate we are. Because we don't merely do the will of God, we are defined by the will of God. It's part of who we are. That's Ashreichem Yisrael. Now, given that background, we can understand the juxtaposition of the most dreadful sexual sins with the lofty mission of Kedoshim to you. Because the Torah is teaching us a very valuable lesson. Judaism abhors mediocrity. If we're not going to strive for holiness, we are likely to become distinctive in a much more negative way. We're not going to just blend into the scenery and become parv. Our spiritual makeup doesn't allow for us to remain parv. Varon Soloveitchik commented on Rashi in Sefer Bereishis, "Va'bor reik ein bo mayim." The pit was empty; it didn't have any water. And Rashi comments, "Ooh, mayim ein bo v'nechashim akrabim yeshbo." How did Rashi know this? Where does the Torah indicate that there were dangerous creatures lurking in the pit? Rav Aaron Soloveitchik explained that Rashi understood that where there's potential for water, the void caused by its absence will immediately be filled by something negative. Speaking metaphorically, of course. It's precisely when there's the potential for good that so much potential for evil exists. Throughout thousands of years of Jewish history, the world has recognized that there's something different about us. Rav Soloveitchik in Kol Dodido Feik, the famous drasha where he laid claim to his reputation as a religious Zionist, which was certainly not something that he had before and something that was not a tradition in his family, far from it. He gave this amazing drasha weeks before the Sinai War of 1956. He pointed out that among the words that we use for a Jew is Yisraeli, Yehudi, yeah, but Ivri. And the first person to be called that was Avram Avinu. He was called Ivri for the simple reason that he came, Me'ever Anar, from the other side of the Euphrates River. And it's difficult to understand at first. We're granted our title Ivri because we came from somewhere else. Why is the fact that Avram was from the other side of the river a significant factor in determining what he and his children are going to be called forever and ever? And Rav Soloveitchik explained that the name Ivri defines the reality of Jewish life. No matter how hard we try to be like everybody else, no matter how hard we try to assimilate, we try to disappear into the melting pot, all such efforts are ultimately futile. And that message was made clear to the Jewish people time and time again. I remember once I was on a family vacation in Rhode Island and the rabbi of the shul announced, if you see anybody in a Yankees hat, tell them what time mincha is. You know, the Jew thinks he puts on his Yankees hat, no one's going to know. Tell them what time mincha is. We're always the Ivri. We're always from the other side. We always stand out, positively or negatively. From the Nobel Prize winners, the Gedola Yisrael, Avdil, to very negative ways. That's why Yonah, the Navi Yonah, after trying to escape the command of God, when he's confronted on that stormy night at sea with the question, who are you? What does he say? Ivri Anochi. I'm being singled out. I can't escape. I thought I could sink into anonymity in the depths of the ship, but I realize I'll always be distinct. And it's when he realized his unique position and that being distinct requires that we choose to distinguish ourselves for good or for bad, that Yonah finally says, Ves Hashem Elokei HaShemayim Ani Yareh. If I'm going to be distinct, that's the way I want it to be. Ves Hashem Elokei HaShemayim Ani Yareh. I commit myself to the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yom HaShoah is a day where we remember that the Jewish people are always distinct. We remember that it's not only that we fall beneath when we don't have things going the way we want them to, that we fall beneath umashvela batachas behemton shulamashvela. And soon after, we remember and celebrate what happens when things go well for the Jewish people. The miracles of Yom HaAtzmaut that we're going to be celebrating in short order. And we have to keep our eye on the ball, and we have to remember that our job is not done. And to always be on guard, and to always realize what kind of incredible potential we have as individuals and as a nation, and that when we let that potential be squandered, we let that potential be wasted, it's not just wasted potential. It's the ultimate destruction. Rav Yosef Nechem Mikornitzer writes in his drashos, what's the big isser of shchutei chutz? Why is it so much worse than just shechting stam an animal? So you didn't bring a carbon. He says, no, the reason why it's such a big deal is because here you had the potential for kedusha. You had the potential for something that could have been used as a carbon l'Hashem, and instead you just tried to use it in some mundane manner. That's the ultimate tragedy. And it ultimately becomes not just something mundane, it becomes much, much worse. It becomes this terrible issue. That's the message of Jewish history, and it's a message specifically at this time of year that we constantly need to remind ourselves of.